career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them, is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here's the thing.
If you smile enough that everybody smiles.
Here's the thing.
If you work a little harder, you'll get by.
Here's the thing.
Or you can trust a man who wears a suit and tie.
So just lies, 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 lies.
Here's the thing. If your parents work to earn it, then it's yours.
Here's the thing.
And if you're barely getting by, then that's your fault.
Here's the thing.
Everything in life is fair, and that's the rules. It's all just lies, 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 lies.
We're back at the races. It's about 20 after. Here's the thing. Looking forward to a visit, as always, with Pat McKenna, PC McKenna, joining us from the New York Racing Association. Good morning.
Morning, Steve. Coming at you live from the Big A.
It's got to be glorious.
You know, it is a glorious day. The turf courses are lush and green. Glenn Kozak did a tremendous job over the winter keeping these two turf courses in working order, and we're ready to rock down here on a Thursday. Start of a new live race week. So,
well, and of course, coming off of the heels of Wood Memorial Day, which certainly came off smashingly.
Yeah, it was a fun day.
Yeah, and then listen, racing was good. You know, I didn't check the handle. How was handle on Saturday?
It was strong. It was about 18 million. I think it ended up being about 25% higher than last year. So, big day.
Wow.
There was really good energy here on the property, and it felt like, you know, building some momentum here as we look forward to the opening of beautiful Belmont Park.
Well, speaking of building and momentum and Belmont Park, what a segue that was, Pat. That was brilliant.
Thank you.
Anybody that has been watching, you know, my Twitter feed is certainly yours. The really underhanded attacks on the industry at large, the industry specifically in New York, NYRA by association, by, you know, the fact that it's the, you know, the quintessential element of racing in New York, just a parade of lies and misinformation facilitated by the Capital District's leading newspaper in part, and it really, Pat, it really came into focus with what was going on in the legislature, and it feels like it was so orchestrated to try to, you know, somehow, break up a legislated you know, reality, a legal reality between NYRA and the state and the gaming. Talk about what went on ahead of this weekend's budget work.
Sure, let me back up a little bit, and I'll just lay out the basics here, because the back-and-forth budget battles are not often followed closely by a lot of people, especially folks who may be paying really close attention to New York racing. So as part of the fiscal year 2023 budget, which was passed by the legislature and signed by the governor last week, they accelerated the process by which downstate casino licenses can be awarded. You may recall that the original casino enabling legislation precluded the presence of full casinos in what is known as the downstate region. So that's the five boroughs, the lower Hudson Valley, as well as all of Long Island. That is why in those areas, you have VLT facilities, the VLT facility run by Resorts World here at Aqueduct, the VLT facility at Yonkers, and then scattered in a couple locations in Long Island. What became clear, you know, as that conversation was proceeding and really accelerated over the last, you know, six or so months as a priority of both the legislature and the governor, that the original legislation, again, did not contemplate the transition from a VLT facility to a full casino. It's technically a different license. A byproduct of that is the racing support payments, which were statutorily guaranteed through 2033 through both the franchise agreement, state law, various tax codes. The continuation of those racing support payments are also not contemplated in this process. So to make a very long story short, the racing industry was successful in securing protections to those racing support payments, no matter what happens with downstate casinos. So those racing support payments are held harmless at the 2019 level, which was a particularly successful year for the casino, you know, also for purses, for everything that those funds are utilized for. So that is what we achieved through the New York State budget. And it's obviously incredibly significant because you're talking about, you know, more than $200 million a year that flows to not just NYRA, but every harness track, Finger Lakes, the breeding and development funds for both breeds and the thoroughbred and standard bred side. So it's one of those sort of technical things that, you know, if left undone, or, you know, if we didn't address it as aggressively as we did, then who knows? So it's a significant victory. It certainly shows yet again that the legislature and the governor clearly recognize the importance of horse racing to the New York State economy. This is a sport that drives an industry responsible for 19,000 jobs, billions in annual economic impact every single year. And NYRA, the sport in New York, is in a really strong place. So, you know, these are not subsidies that are propping up a dying sport. Quite the contrary. These are monies that flow, in NYRA's case, to NYRA because we conveyed three incredibly valuable pieces of property to the state in 2008. In exchange for that, we received funds from the casino located on what was NYRA property, much more akin to rent payments than a subsidy that you may see in other states, literally a line item on a budget in Pennsylvania or in other places that is just cash to the racing industry. That's not what it is in New York. And so it was important, obviously, to protect that stream of funding, and a lot, you know, credit to to Dave O'Rourke and others here at NIRA, who in the last 2 years really prioritize government affairs, aggressive communications, the hiring of Jeff Canizzo as the director of NIRA's government affairs has been really impactful. He's based in upstate New York. He's based in Saratoga. He's as familiar with the legislature as anyone in the sport by virtue of his more than decade at the New York Thoroughbred Breeders. So, it is incumbent on NIRA to pay close attention, to be aggressive, to clearly and consistently communicate our priorities to the legislature. And, as a result, we've achieved some really significant successes that ultimately are good for the sport and increase the value of this New York State asset, the franchise.
And I know we do it on a semi-regular basis, but I want you to reiterate the basis for this, because I don't know if you got a chance to hear David Fuskus with me last week I think, and we touched on this because of the outlandish verbiage in PETA's commercial with Edie Falco. And when I started the conversation calling their campaign underhanded, the constant misrepresentation of the way in which the entire legislation came together, not just this money, Pat, but going back to the money that was advanced against the VLT revenues that is still characterized in press as a bailout, when in fact that money was paid back by NIRA to the states. That was actually something that was in the legislation, and yet the Times Union continues to characterize it as a bailout. And if you probably did polling, the public would probably believe that going back that far, it's probably forgotten. I mean, there's all these nuances. I mean, if you're close to it and involved in it, we all know the truth. And granted, the audience that listens, nods their heads and they understand and agree. But, how often are we going to, on an annual basis with each state budget, have to beat back this kind of attack every year?
Yes, I think we will. And we're well prepared to do it. The coalition, the We Are New York Racing Coalition, continues to grow in size. You may have seen our advertisement on television that's been running in heavy rotation through March Madness. We've extended that. It'll be running through some upcoming, live sports, entertainment, and live news, which is an area of television that still gets strong ratings. So, we're prepared for this. This will likely be an annual fight. And in fairness, Steve, this is a relatively complicated set of circumstances. Just think about how long it took me to describe the structure of these VLT payments and then the required protections to the VLT payments that we secured through the state budget. These are not easy issues, and the opposition certainly has the much clearer message, though, as you say, it is based on either a complete mischaracterization or out and out lies. So it's incumbent on us to step up, to be aggressive, to explain clearly and often to stakeholders, to legislators, all the way up to the governor's office, that this is a sport that, number one, is incredibly successful right now. Much of the opposition's argument is the foundation of that is that that horse racing is in decline. It couldn't be any further from the truth. In 2021, NIRA generated more handle than any year since 2008. Think about that. You know, it's a 13-year high. If you were to explain that in another sport, you know, if the Yankees had a 14-year high in attendance, which is a metric that's much more relevant to you know, a Major League Baseball team than it is to us, anyone rational would say, wow, that's a significant success. For us, the most accurate measure of fan engagement is pari mutuel handle. And you could easily make the argument, and we do, that fan engagement with Naira Racing is as strong and as robust as at any point in recent memory. Look at Saratoga that continues to expand, that sustains its excellence year after year. Wagering records in two of the last 3 years, $800 million in handle this past year. I mean, I could go on and on. The strength of the national television show, the investment by Fox in Naira, the strength of Naira Bets. I mean, these are new revenue streams that are, you know, that are important to Naira, to racing in New York State, to the hardworking horsemen who put on the show every day. All aspects of the industry. And let's not paint too broad a brush with some of the folks who oppose, who fundamentally oppose the sport. You know, thankfully, that is a tiny minority of the elected officials in Albany. What we've seen is that the vast majority of our elected officials clearly recognize what this sport means to the entire state. I mean, you know, we're lucky to have obviously strong support in the areas where we operate, in Elmont and the surrounding towns and villages, in Saratoga and throughout the capital region, right here in Queens with Senator Joe Addabbo, who chairs the Racing and Gaming Committee, who is a champion for thoroughbred racing here in New York. So, you know, this is a good time for New York racing. It's a particularly strong moment for Naira as we look to the future. With this legislative victory behind us, we will get right back to work on securing the New York State-backed bonds that will finance the eventual reconstruction, redevelopment, reimagining of Belmont Park. So onward. I was at Belmont yesterday, and it's always a, you know, spent all morning on the backstretch in the barn area. And, you know, the diversity of jobs and occupations, I mean, you know, carpenters, steam fitters, you know, even the track kitchen employing dozens and dozens of people, you know, it is a clear reminder that this is a sport that sustains New York families now, in the future, and provides economic opportunity that without it, it's difficult to even process when you're seeing the people, talking to the people that actually that have the jobs that we're constantly talking about.
You know, two things, and I want to get back. I want to get you an update from you on the bond question that I guess was not was tabled, but we'll get to in a second. One thing that you didn't mention when you said about you know, the America's Day at the Races and Saratoga Live, I would imagine, and I know the financial specifics were not announced. But Fox's acquisition of the rights to broadcast the Belmont Stakes, I would think, is also an indication of, you know, enhanced value, of, you know, overall enhanced, you know, value of the franchise, of, you know, of the racing product in New York.
A counterparty like Fox, an international company, doesn't invest a dollar in something that they think is a losing proposition. Again, to the contrary, you know, Fox views that Naira, Saratoga, the Belmont Stakes, some of our premier properties, but ultimately every single day they're seeing the growth. They're seeing the growth in the television platform. The Travers had more viewers last year on Fox than any Travers since 2015 with American Pharoah. That'll likely grow. And as Tony Alvado, who runs the TV department, will say, and he's certainly, time has proven this to be correct, this wasn't a short-term strategy. You know, this is a strategy that will have always taken, you know, 4 or 5, 6 years. And I think we're now seeing that strategy proven correct. The viewership is strong. It's national. It's particularly strong, obviously, when you're seeing, up in Saratoga. We'll have more hours on FS1, the flagship sports network for Fox, this year than ever before. More hours on Fox broadcast than ever before. So, you know, and again, it's a little bit of a complicated conversation. I think sometimes the knee-jerk reaction is that horse racing will, of course, be left out of this boom in sports betting. It's not true. You know, Fox Sports sees horse racing as integral to the overall landscape of sports betting. So we're not on those platforms here in New York right now. We're precluded legislatively and by rule from being offered on those platforms. But, you know, we've worked out partnerships with Caesars, with BetMGM. We're providing them our NairaBets technology so that they can go out and offer their customers wagering services on horse racing. So again, a new revenue stream, something that's important, and a strategy set at the very top by Dave O'Rourke and the management team. And, you know, these are important moments. It's been a really strong year, certainly 2021. And I think everyone around here is, and hopefully your listeners are optimistic about the coming months as we work to the Belmont Spring Summer Meet and then on to Saratoga.
Nice. Bring everybody up to speed on the Belmont project. We were kind of watching for, I know that when we spoke, I don't know, maybe a month ago, give or take, some of the prospects to put the mechanism in place for the bonds was pending.
Sure. It's important to clarify, especially now after the dust has settled on the budget a little bit. We're not looking to borrow $450 million from the state. There are no taxpayer dollars that we're asking for. What we're asking for is access to state-backed bonds. Because the state borrows so much, they can access these bonds at a preferable rate. So that's what we're looking to do. It was not included in any of the budget proposals. So I saw an attack the other day saying that the legislature had cut NYRA's request for the state-backed bonds. That's, again, not the case. It wasn't included in any of the three budget proposals. It would have been a late-breaking item that didn't get done, along with a whole bunch of other things in various areas and industries that also didn't get done at the 11th hour. But again, we're optimistic that we can get this introduced and advanced, hopefully, this session. So it's a transformative project that will complete the reimagined Belmont Park. Again, I was just over there yesterday. UBS Arena looks fantastic. We're moving fast and furious to kind of reorganize our new backyard, you know, with some amenities that I hope our fans will appreciate in short order.
Nice. And the construction of that retaining wall, which is intrinsic to the ability to provide access to the infield, which, you know, is going to offset, you know, I know people, I've certainly seen some people that are still, gnashing teeth over, the part of the backyard that was needed to be devoted to the arena. But I suppose if you've got the entire infield, those same people probably are saying, we're going to defile the infield now. It's like you can't win no matter what direction.
Yeah. I mean, not we certainly didn't have much control over the UBS arena. The exact nature of that footprint in the end, but there's some really good things happening, and this is an opportunity to add some things to the backyard. It certainly won't be as large as it once was, but it's an evolution, and you know, we think that we'll be providing some things to our loyal fans that that they'll appreciate, some new amenities in the same way that we've done year after year at Saratoga Racecourse, where the paddock bar is on schedule to open. The Oklahoma training track will open on Saturday. The barn area will begin receiving horses tomorrow. So a busy time and an exciting time.
Wow. Nice. Any added news or ticketing information necessary regarding Saratoga?
I'll go back to my normal refrain on that, which is visit nyer.com/Saratoga, because if I try to get through what's currently available and what will soon be available, I may muddy the waters. So nyer.com/Saratoga, there's plenty of inventory currently available, and we'll have some additional announcements here in short order.
How about Belmont Stakes Day? What do we where do we stand for Belmont?
In terms of ticket availability?
Yeah, what kind of it's wide open capacity wise, right? What was the compared to last year? Obviously,
attendance is limited to 50,000. Capacity this year is 50,000. And back to your point about the infield, that 50,000 capacity is based on the reduced size of the backyard, and in advance of us having fully unlocked the infield. Right now, we're building this enormous retaining wall that will allow for the construction of vehicular and pedestrian tunnels to, first and foremost, renovate the racing surfaces, all three of them, potentially add a synthetic surface, as well as provide access to the infield for big events like the Belmont Stakes. So that could come as early as 2024. It's difficult in this day and age to very accurately predict these, you know, the timeline for these enormous projects because of everything you hear in the world about supply chain issues and materials and delays and shipping and the rest of it. But luckily our team is the best in the business when it comes to that stuff. So this year and next year, attendance will be, you know, we'll see attendance of about 50,000. And that's again, a significant reduction in general admission tickets due to the reduced size of the backyard.
All right. Well, now we're getting close, obviously. And once we get to Belmont week, it's hard not to then see beyond and Saratoga on the horizon. So it's all happening. Nothing does more to get everybody in the mood for Saratoga than being stopped on Union Avenue by the crossing guards.
Yep. We appreciate everyone's patience on Union Avenue.
I love it.
Oh, and just a reminder, as required by New York State law, there is no horse racing or paramutual betting allowed on Easter Sunday.
We were just yesterday, we were celebrating the you know, that we were able to play at least on Palm Sunday. That went a long way to is there a big Easter ham in the McKenna household Sunday?
You know, I don't know, actually. I haven't given it a ton of thought. It's been a busy few weeks, but we'll turn a little bit of attention in that direction in the next day or so.
Well, we're going to be on the, Tina and I are going to be on the road. So I nothing makes it harder for Passover to keeping to the matzah than being on the road. It's a
right.
So I have to suspend. I'm afraid I'm going to have to, unless Aaron Yagoda, unless I get a overnight package from Aaron, of, you know, of Streit's, kind of a lifeblood, and several cans of macaroons in the next 4 or 5 hours. I'll watch the mailbox. And by the way, it was very, very nice yesterday. I saw where your office circulated awareness of the Julio Pazua Fund, which has raised a ton of money in 2 days.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're just trying to promote it as best we can, but you know, heck of a job by Aaron Yagoda to start that and to highlight the story there. And we're obviously all hoping for a speedy recovery.
Well, I should get an update from him and Anthony, because they've been visiting Julio. Well, Pat, I appreciate it, and well done. I guess the reality is we're gonna have to suit up, you know, every early spring or late winter to ward off, you know, the lies and you know, these attacks. It would just something we're gonna have to do.
That's right.
All right. PC McKenna, everybody, follow Pat on Twitter. Thanks, Pat. I appreciate it, Pat McKenna, and you're up to speed on everything. We're about 10 minutes from visiting, not even 8 minutes, give or take, from visiting with Jim Lawson and catching up on the Woodbine season. And they've got their opening day card set for your evaluation and opening day stake. Well, because I put it on my website, so you would think that I would instantly recall. I know that they've got the Thorncliffe on Sunday that they'll draw today. The Long Branch. This is the Canadian Long Branch, as opposed to the New Jersey version of Long Branch that's run at Monmouth. And actually, we're not that's another conversation. It's coming up soon, I suppose, with Dennis Drazen to get ready for Monmouth's opening next, right? It's coming fast and furious, I'll tell you. And now officially, as Pat was referencing, I mean, we are over the hump when it comes to, you know, that residual crappy winter that really didn't want to quit. And it's, you know, it's amazing how quickly, I mean, we've had basically, I don't know, 2 days of warmish afternoons. I mean, it's still been cool in the morning. Listen, cool in the morning, for those of you that come for Saratoga, it could be in the high 30s in August, let alone now. But it really took 2 seconds for all of a sudden the grass goes from, the lawn goes from, you know, looking gray and dead, you know, to having green in it and looking ready to. In fact, Tina and I were driving. Where were we driving the other day? And it was, you know, just all of a sudden it goes from that dirty, you know, everything looks, you know, just looks dead and blech. All of a sudden, it just, things look like cleaner. Maybe it's the rains that we got. And all of a sudden, things just look, you know, that much nicer. And the mood brightens. I'll tell you one thing. I mean, Tina, the light, I don't know if it's the light deprivation of winter or what, but as soon as that goes away, the winter stuff, boom, she blossoms too, like a crocus. Or a daffodil. That's my wife. I was going to say it with Pat, but we had so much to, you know, talk about. She bought these I don't know what brand they are, if they're Kleenex or what, but they're treated with what's got to be like Vicks VapoRub, right? Have you experienced these? So, because between Eric's visit and Pat's, I had to, you know, I had to go blow my nose. And every time now, I mean, it's only been like 2 days. She must have gotten them, I don't know, at some point. All of a sudden, I switched, I went to reach for a tissue. I go, ooh, the tissues have this, you know, this eucalyptus-y. She goes, yeah, I got those for you. I thought you'd like that. Well, and I do like it. But I'll tell you one thing. And I don't, maybe I'm dating my, I'll date myself with this. When I was a kid and you'd get sick, my parents had, humidifier, right? Humidifier? The humidifier. And it was, it might have even been, Vicks might have had the name. You know, Vicks is, I think, still now owned by Procter. But anyway, it was a green glass tank, and you filled it with water, and then it sprayed air, you know, it sprayed the air with the, you know, with the steam. Vaporizer. There we go. Not a humidifier. Vaporizer. And there was a cup, and you would put Vicks, you know, mentholated whatever, the vapor rub. You'd put it, you'd smear a bunch in the cup, in the little like tin cup that was in the front, like right below where the steam would come out. And it would make the room, you know, it would fill the room with this steamy vapor rub. You know, for colicky Stevie, these tissues, every time now for like 3 days when I've used these tissues, I've been like transported back to my room as a kid with the vaporizer. It's like, you know, transformative. It's unbelievable. Am I just? And if I'm just being, you know, crazy about this, you can say so. But right? You know what I mean? Does anybody recollect this? That smell? Or, you know, they'd rub it on your chest and you know, I assume they still do it, right? The babies still, they're still colicky babies, right? It's just funny. I'm telling you, for 3 days, give or take, with these tissues, and every time I go to blow my nose, that smell just reminds me of when I was a kid. So, all right. I never know what is going to. Just fill my head with insanity. All right, we're going to reach out and bring in Jim Lawson, who I haven't talked to since the beginning of last season. And of course, you know, last season it was a whole situation with Woodbine, and we had to keep checking in with Jim, as you know, he was more or less, you know, begging the provincial government to let them open the racetrack. You know, there was certainly the blueprint that had been established around, you know, around the rest of North America about how to, you know, about how to handle, you know, keeping the racetrack, you know, safe and you know, monitoring the health aspect. It was very Ontario, not just Ontario. I imagine I'm more familiar with what went on in Ontario and Quebec than anywhere else in Canada. But they absolutely made it very difficult. And, you know, it was very, very hard for Woodbine to get going. And once they did, though, everything went very well. So, look, hey, Jim, I appreciate it. Jim Lawson is joining us from Woodbine. And Jim, we lost him. We lost him. All right. Let me try it back. So hang in here with me for a second as we get Jim back. I hope. Yeah. There we go. That's a better connection. The first go around. Hey, I noticed that too, Jim. I was just saying that to everybody that there was like a choppiness to the connection. There was a choppiness to your season last year. It's got to feel good to have a April opening and a normal start to Woodbine 2022.
Yeah, certainly the ability to plan has been a big up. The horses can come up here with the confidence that they're going to run. I mean, we have so many of our trainers that head south for the winter, and last year with all the uncertainty, they weren't sure whether to ship in or not, and it's been that way for a couple of years. So this really sets everyone's mind at ease this year.
Talk about basically having to make all the amendments that you did, and we talked, gosh, how many times, almost monthly, we would check in with you, Jim, as you were cajoling the province to let you get going. What was in the final analysis after December, how did 2021 shake out?
Well, it was a great season, actually, as it turned out. I mean, we dug ourselves a big hole with the wagering numbers, but in terms of the how we bounced back on not only our field sizes were probably the highest in North America for a meet of our length. I think we had over 9 horses per average field size. Our wagering was up, and notwithstanding the big hole we dug, it was a very successful year for us, and it sets us up well for this year. We've managed to bring in some new trainers, and things are very positive as we are ready to get underway on the weekend.
Well, the Saturday card, the opening day card, was drawn yesterday, and the Long Branch, the feature, they'll put the Sunday card together today. And just looking at opening day, you get the sense that it's really a return to normalcy.
Yeah, certainly. We didn't draw as well as we hoped. I wish I could give you an explanation. We've got we've carded 8 races for Saturday, and I'll blame that more on the weather than anything. We just have not had a great winter and spring here. We've had a lot of harsh weather, and that more than anything. But we anticipate some of that. We're starting slowly. We've got 2 days this weekend and 2 days the following weekend, and then we'll go to a full 4 days per week starting the week of May 12th. So I'm feeling very confident. We've got a lot of horses on the grounds and a lot more scheduled to ship in. So we'll be in good shape once we get going in full speed here.
And as it happens, looking at some of the names and some of the horses that have stayed, for instance, in Florida, that portion of the horse population, either spread out, and so there may be some people that just said, I'll wait and we'll stay in training down here in advance of shipping back, particularly if it was continuing to be unseasonable. And winter essentially, even here in the Saratoga area, basically hung in until about 3 days ago. So I can imagine up there that you've been dealing with the same thing: cold and rain and sleety and crappy. And if horsemen are training horses daily at Tampa and Gulfstream and the like, and Palmettos, what's the rush?
Yeah, Yeah, that's exactly what's going on. And in addition to that, this latest wave of the pandemic, I don't think has helped. If people were thinking of shipping in a couple of weeks ago, the numbers in Ontario we've returned to at least a temporary mask mandate, at least internally, for our horse people, not in the paddock and outside. But it's the numbers are high here again, and we're just trying to follow government policy. And I think that probably makes people a little nervous too right now, given the high numbers in Ontario. Mm. So I think people are very comfortable where they are or where they've been winter training, and it just feels a little slower. But as I said, we've got a great program. We've got $17 million in stakes races for 2022 this season, and 37 graded stakes, and we've got 133 days of racing. So people are going to come back as they always do and settle in, and we're looking forward to it.
Let's you bring up the stakes schedule. Let's get a couple of the biggest weekends out and let people pencil in their opportunity to come in for things like Woodbine Mile Day and of course for the Plate and the Queen's Plate in August. It's been moved around quite a bit the last couple of years.
Yes, it has. And I said this the other day, whether it stays in the third week of August, as it is again this year, from last year, we ran it on that August 20th, 21st weekend, which we're doing again this year. It proved to be successful last year. We had a lot of horses ready to go a mile and a quarter in August, partly, again, I think, influenced by the pandemic and some trainers not going south. Again, we just talked about the horrible winter and spring that we've had, and they'd be hard-pressed, at least the ones that stayed local, to get ready for a June Queen's Plate. So
yeah.
August was successful last year, and we're going to do it again. And we wagered well. We had great field size, and so we're looking forward to that weekend. And that weekend actually sets up well and some of the prep races for the September 17th weekend, which will be the Woodbine Mile, as you mentioned, and then the two other winning you're in, the Summer Stakes and the Natalma, all grade one races, all just perfectly timed for some of those horses to move right on to the Breeders' Cup at Keeneland this year. So it's going to be an exciting time, as always, our fall turf racing, which is really exciting. We've got the E.P. Taylor Stakes Saturday, October 8th, too, which has again turned into a wonderful Grade 1 event for fillies and mares.
And I just pulled up, there's actually a very convenient, I'm glad to find this, a very convenient PDF printable stakes calendar. And, in addition to August 21st, you go back a month into July, Woodbine Oaks Day and the Plate Trial on July 24th,
yeah.
As well as the Dance Smartly on that card and the Hendry. So July 24th, a terrific date, the Sunday card, Saturday, the Connaught Cup, and then laying out, as you mentioned, moving up to the not just the Queen's Plate, but the Canadian and King Eddie as well. Always a tremendous day of racing. Going to try to get up again for Woodbine Mile this year. It's been like 3 years, and you mentioned the other two important grade ones for the two-year-olds, the Natalma and the Summer. Yeah, it's amazing, actually, that the fall has really become the fall. You've always, even post Breeders' Cup, it's always been an important spot on the calendar, and that includes bringing Europeans over for the big Grade One opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll tell you, this racing calendar though is so crowded that a lot of competition. So we really are to pick our spots, the Europeans, the Euros do like Woodbine because of the wide sweeping turf course, that mile and a half turf course, and the turns are just something that they're much more used to and much more willing to try. You know, as we've seen year after year, and there are lots of exceptions, but the tight inner turf courses are tough for the Euros at times, especially if they get an outside post. That's not a problem at Woodbine,
no.
An outside post or tight turn. So the Euros like it, we're going to continue to promote our fall product. But as I said, it's really an exercise every year of trying to figure out what the competition are doing.
You know, I had Eric Hallstrom earlier talking about Indiana's season, which gets underway Tuesday, and we talked for him about the Indiana breads and how you know, how helpful and important they are to, you know, to building cards. We should really mention that, because I saw, I would say, midwinter, Jim, if I'm not mistaken, the kind of a reiteration of the province's support for the breeding operations in Ontario. I thought that seemed very encouraging.
Yeah, certainly the formation of Ontario Racing and just looking at how to sustain the industry, that we really do need to be careful that this industry all is founded on the breeders and, of course, and the owners that buy those horses. So we've got to incentivize people. We had a good incentive program this year for a mare purchase program. There are a number of mares purchased pursuant to that. We've got purse monies allocated additional again this year for Ontario Sired Stakes program, and certainly looking after the Ontario breeders and the Ontario horse people is a priority, and that's going to sustain us over the long term, and we're cognizant of that. It's a fine balance, because horse supply is tight everywhere.
Yep.
We do a very good job of recruiting horses to come north of the border, and we also have to make sure that they have places to run. So I know our horse people, as maybe they are at every track in North America, are concerned when races don't go, and it's really a difficult job for our racing secretary to make sure that we deliver that nice balance between supporting our local horses and local breed and the fact that we've got a number of people coming north of the border and racing here for 6 to 8 months. And so it's a delicate balance, and it's something that we're cognizant of and do our best to try and keep everyone happy, even though in this industry, you know, that not everyone's happy very much of the time, but we try to do our best.
Jim Lawson with us from Woodbine, and I should expand the conversation a little bit too. Woodbine Entertainment Group, WEG, and quick survey of Woodbine Mohawk we should include.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Mohawk is just, in my view, we do such a great job. Jessica Buckley, Bill McClinchy on the standardbred side, you know, a testament to that is the Mohawk Million that we're getting going again this year. We have, unlike the Queen's Plate, we've moved back the Pepsi North America's Cup back to June. But talk about a wonderful stakes program and a year-round program with big field sizes. The Mohawk is really hit its stride the last 2 or 3 years, and with the improvements we've made, not only to the facility but with purses and you know, we're very proud of where Mohawk stands in the North America market today, that's for sure. And the wagering reflects that.
Really nice. And 4 days a week racing at Mohawk. And we'll keep tabs on the contest scene as well for Woodbine this year. One of really a hotbed, some of the best players in North America on the contest scene. They're Toronto is their base, you know, whether it's Lauren Weiss and his son and Tommy Hammer, and there's so many. You guys keep everybody honest.
Well, it's good because I think a lot of it has to do with our field sizes. Obviously, that's what the handicapper wants. In the end, they want big field sizes, and we've been successful in delivering those field sizes. As I said, averaging over 9 last year. I think the inner turf course, which is quite different in so many ways, not just in the shape but in terms of the grass, even it's just a different play on our inner turf course to our E.P. Taylor turf course, and lots of betting angles certainly at Woodbine, which is what makes it such an attractive product to the wagers, because they like that uncertainty, they like those high odds, and they like the opportunity to handicap it, and so. I think that's why it's a popular product for sure.
Well, and a great signal. I didn't include. I got to include Ray Arsenault. If I didn't mention Ray, he'd be upset. Are all the snowbirds home? Have all the players? Have they all vacated their Florida digs?
I don't know, but I'll tell you when we will know is Saturday.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. They're pretty. We make it pretty easy for them. I love our HPI system that they use, and the quality of our simulcast is second to none. So we make it easy for them wherever they are.
Well, we're looking forward to the Woodbine season. Starts on Saturday, and Ron Gierkink will be a regular visitor as we handicap a lot of the big weekends and the racing at Woodbine. Jim Lawson, you sound so relaxed and confident compared to the anguished conversations we had to have last year and the year before. So I wish everybody a great season at Woodbine, and look forward to getting up there either in August or September.
Well, we look forward to seeing you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to come on today. I really am. I don't know if I'm relaxed, but I'm sure excited. We've got a lot of things to be positive about as we come into this season. I know we're going to have a great season, and want to thank everyone for their loyalty to our products, because we work hard at it, and it's nice to see it rewarded with the type of wagering numbers that we've been getting. In particular, in the United States, we had four in handle last year of $420 million, which is really big for us.
And nice.
The numbers mean less than the fact that it was a record, which for me means that our brand continues to grow south of the border, which is great news, and we're appreciative, and we'll continue to work hard to earn everyone's trust.
Jim Lawson, everybody, Woodbine, and the season starts on Saturday. You're going to wade into it a little bit, a couple of Saturday and Sunday cards for a few weeks, and then as the weather warms up the racing action and the race days will expand to the normal calendar, and we're looking forward to it. Jim, thanks so much. Best of luck.
Thank you very much for having me on. Appreciate it. Good luck to everybody. Thank you.
Jim Lawson, folks, and the season at Woodbine, ready to go. I'm just looking. I certainly see plenty of Cassie. Cassie's ready. He's unbelievable. Mark is ready to fire. I didn't really go over some of the names, but I did notice, I did see the news, and I know he listens some mornings because I hear from him here and there. Declan Carroll is going to go up and ride, and certain to get a lot of mounts out of the Cassie barn. Just looking here and seeing here's Beautiful Empire in the allowance sixth for Cassie, as well as Sweet Carolina. Brad Cox, how about this, Brad Cox? Did he bring this up the other day? Did this come up that he was going to have a string? How about that, Brad Cox? Let me see how many. He's only got one in the sixth. We'll have to see how that story I think he did mention that he was going to send horses up to Woodbine in a visit. Interesting. Well, we'll talk to Ron Gierkink as well and get set for their betting menu and their season. Well, and here's, how about this? Here's the fourth race, which is a 5-furlong sprint on the Tapeda, a allowance, optional claimer, and two guests from this week, DJ Stable and Erin Yagoda, Lois Len, making her 3-year-old debut, last seen in the South Ocean placing. And this is a nice filly, Ontario bred. Interesting. And this is Open Company, right? Yeah, Open Company Group. It looks like up and little up and down on the field size as Jim was alluding to. Got a couple of smaller fields, but then late in the card things fill out pretty nicely. You got 7 in the Long Branch, and you got a maiden, one of those maiden optional claimers that they run as the nightcap with a full field. You got 10 in the 6th as well, the last pick 3. That's a 5-furlong. That's that I mentioned. That's a nice field of 8. Yeah, well, getting going at Woodbine. Very good. Indiana and Woodbine wanted to get an opportunity to kick off the season. So thanks to Eric and Jim Lawson. Let's take a break, second of the morning. And when we come back, we've got Rich Yang to come. And going to reach out and see if we can't get a little conversation, too, about the Aqueduct Pick 6, and I'm sure Andy has already sent out the changes. So let me the scratches. So let me check on that during the break. All right, and indeed, he has. There they are. Ooh, and there's a few changes. All right, this may help. Might make it easier. All right, I'll work on it, and we'll come back. We'll look at this Pick 6. Get Rich Yang and more. At the Races, stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning. Learn more at countrylifefarm.com.
Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. 4 brand new races to be run at Parks for PA-sired, PA-bred 2-year-olds. There are 2 $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA Day of the Races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has 2 more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series, yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry,